the Talent Talk podcast, the official podcast of Morehead State University Athletics. I'm Cassidy Stearman, and we have an insightful show for you. A reminder, you can access this podcast on msueagles.com, the official website of Eagle Athletics, and a variety of other avenues, including Spotify, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. You can also access archived episodes on msueagles.com/podcast. This is episode number 4. Today's show features Drew Barnett, who served as the Director of Student Athlete Services at Morehead State. Barnett is a native of Louisville and a graduate of Xavier University. He served as Athletic Academic Advisor at UAB before coming to MSU and is now in his fourth year here at MSU. Barnett directs all of his academic activities for the Eagle Athletics Program. He discusses his role at Morehead State as well as a variety of other sports-related topics today. So let's turn it over to host Matt Shaver.
Welcome into this edition of Talent Talk, the official Morehead State Athletics podcast. I'm Matt Shaber, your host, and glad to be joined today by Drew Barnett, the Director of Student Athlete Services. And this, Drew, is our first in-person podcast, so glad you're able to make the walk down from campus and join me here this afternoon.
Okay, great. Yeah, it's good to be here, I guess, in studio. I guess most of these have been done over the phone or over Zoom or something like that, so... You know, if you're listening at home, you probably don't know the difference, but we actually are in the same room right now.
We are, yes. We do. Contrary to popular belief, we are friends, and we can be in the same room together.
Yeah, so we can.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your background, Drew, and I know this is your fourth year here at Morehead State, but, in charge of basically, your title is Director of Student Athlete Service, in charge of basically the academic well-being and of all of our student athletes here. Is that something that you always wanted to get into helping students and in the athletic departments and be an academic kind of advisor?
I think so. I don't know at what point I figured out I wanted to do this specific role, but even before I got to college, I thought I would want to work at a university. I just like the vibrance of it. And, I'd always been a fan of college athletics. So I went through high school not knowing what I wanted to do. I went through college, jumping from one degree to another, eventually landing on history with no career goal, went to grad school, was in college student personnel. And I started off actually at Wright State, which is up in Dayton, Ohio, as an internship while I was in grad school. And I think I kind of scared them. I was in the athletic department. I was an almanac of what I thought was all this useless information about college sports and all this other academia stuff, and it ended up translating really well into student athlete support, and that's just kind of when the light bulb went on, and I've been doing it ever since. It's really rewarding, but at the same time, I always tell people that want to go into this, your students are going to be like, oh, it's the study hall guy, and the coaches are going to be like, oh, it's the athletic or the academic guy, what's he want now, what's wrong? And on the other side of campus, the professors and the staff are going to be like, oh, it's that athletics guy. What do they want now? So you're going to want to think about getting a dog or something like that if you want to go to in the student athlete support, because there aren't a whole lot of high fives very often. A lot of it's kind of the drudgery and the off the court and field stuff, but it's still really rewarding. I've got no plans to switch careers or doing anything else or go anywhere else. The pandemic's been putting a damper on things this year, but it's been great ever since I've been here.
Well, let's kind of mention that a little bit. And as the academic person in the Eagle Center, which is our academic center, absolutely, if you haven't been up there and know about that, it's a wonderful facility. I think 7,000 square feet, a number of computers, everything that student athletes would want to succeed, you have up there in the Eagle Center.
Yeah.
And we'll get back to that part of it a little bit, but I kind of want to get into, because you see the students on that kind of level and helping them, and you're off the court, basically. And how have you gotten a sense of our Morehead State athletes? And I know it's got to have been, tough. This past semester, basically everyone had to finish up classes online. Yeah. So how did that go, and how did you were able to keep helping them and helping them succeed, even though you weren't face-to-face here?
It was rough, and it's there isn't really a how-to manual on how best to do something like that, because if you remember how fast it came on, I want to say like the first week of March, everything was normal and as it had been all year long and really all decade long, and then a week later everything is upside down and you're trying to figure everything out. They went home for spring break and essentially never came back. So you start texting a lot more, you start Zooming a lot more. Like what we normally do is during the academic mentor meetings when you meet with them is that they come in and they have some of their stuff there and they have their Blackboard and just you kind of go over the syllabi of each class and what do you have coming up and what have you done and what are your grades and what are you struggling with and what do you need help with. That is, so you kind of try to keep that same idea and format in mind, but you're doing it over the phone or you're doing it over FaceTime or you're doing it over Skype or Zoom or something like that. So it was different. And again, to the credit of all of our athletes, they stuck to it because I remember thinking, oh, Jesus, like they can just ignore me. Like, they, you know, here you kind of have a way to chase them down. You know where they are and you can get them into your office if they want to be elusive. But if in this case, they could just not answer the phone. But it was hard. It was hard on everybody. One of the things I learned is to appreciate my friends more because I got so sick of just being at home by myself. I was like, man, I really admire people that voluntarily spend time with me.
Well, I mean, and too, like you said, to the athletes' credit, I think the department as a whole, you know, I don't know if we'd say it was easier to do classes online or not, but the department as a whole maintained one of their better grade point averages in a long time, I think.
So. I want to say it was a 3-4, and I don't. It was the best semester since I've been at Moorhead, and in really of any collective department since I've been doing this anywhere else I've been. I mean, it was considering all the curveballs and all the challenges and people at home, depending on what their home situation is, some of them didn't have internet or some of them we needed to get them stuff or we had guys driving to McDonald's and doing their homework in a parking lot just because that was the only place they could get Wi-Fi. 8 hours at McDonald's in your car, if you can imagine. But, they did it to their extreme credit. It made me look a lot better than what I probably am, but they got it done. And, you feel good for them and you're proud of them. You really want to get to the other side of this COVID so – you know, they can feel the rewards of what they accomplished. But, I was proud of them. I think we all were.
You mentioned you're a big, you know, sports fan all around. And, I've obviously seen you. What is it, not being a coach, but being able to interact with the student-athletes on a daily basis, how do you think that you could help them, not necessarily like you mentioned, you know, coaching advice or if – I guess, you know, you could probably see or you know if someone's had a bad weekend or a rough game or something. What are some things that you tend to maybe do to try to, you know, give advice or kind of pick them up and knowing that, you know what, they've got to kind of get back to it because they've got their academics ahead of them. They don't want to be too down after something like that.
Right. And being a student athlete, it's a great opportunity. It can be very rewarding. But one of the things I don't think the vast majority of people out there and maybe even listening realize is just how hard it is and how draining it is and how challenging it is. I think that we all know, you know, 90% of the people out there could stink at their jobs and be in no danger of losing their livelihood. I mean, have you been to the airport lately or anywhere else? The DMV, been there lately? These people are clearly like not fully invested. If you're a college athlete, while it isn't technically a profession, in a lot of ways, you have to perform at a level that's in the upper 99th percentile of the population just to have a spot on the team. I mean, these are exceptional players. They're way better at the sport than I ever was. And on top of like that, it's just so high pressure because, if you have a bad game, am I going to lose my spot on the team? Is my scholarship in danger? I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty. And coming from high school where they were all, if not the best players on the team, very important to coming to college to where all of a sudden their teammates are far better than anybody they've ever played with. And the competition that they're playing against is on another level. And the workouts are harder. The people are different. They're being coached differently. Maybe they'd always played one position and now they're being asked to convert to another. So even before you get into the classroom part of it, like, this is a huge change in general. The way that things have always been, suddenly it's not that way anymore. And it's a lot harder and a lot more exhausting. And sometimes they kind of go through a period, like you said, where it is discouraging or they do get down on themselves. And everything that they've always done that worked before suddenly isn't working as well now. So helping them through that, I don't have a magic bullet or I don't have a magic one size fits all, but a lot of it is just kind of listening to what they're going through, what they were expecting, and some of the things that are frustrating them. And academics, it's different here too. In high school, you know, it's really structured. You go to your homeroom, you go to second, third, fourth period, lunch, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth, and the teachers are kind of right on top of you. You get to college and it's almost the inverse of that. You might have several hours between classes. The professors, they're not taking roll. They almost don't care if you're there or not. They're not sending notes home. They're not reminding you when things are due. So it is a big change. It's like having two things that you have to juggle at the same time that are both really, really challenging. And it is hard. So, you know, getting back to what you said before, like, our whole office, at least as far as they're concerned, is that we're just here to help them. We're not judged on wins and losses. You know, we're not building schedules. We're not signing contracts. Our entire existence is trying to be a support group for the student athletes.
Let's talk a little bit about just sports in general. What kind of enjoyment do you get? Also, you talk about keeping the athletes' spirits up, but, you know, I've seen you at a lot of our events, and I know you try to make it to just about every event, whether it's a spectator sport or not, even to a rifle match or to a cross-country.
Yeah.
So tell me just about where your love of sports comes from, and then what do you enjoy about seeing our athletes live?
Oh, it's great. Well, tons, first of all. Like, I was a fan. In some circles, that might be sort of a dark secret, but I really am. I was all while growing up. I always loved college sports, college basketball and football in particular, but really all of them. And I mean, I couldn't tell you who's in first place in the NBA at any given time, but I can probably tell you what's going on in the Southland or the MEAC. I mean, I like to watch all 32 conferences. And in some ways, that kind of helps relate to the players. I mean, while I can't play the sport and never could nearly as well as they could, we both have a love for it, me watching it more so than playing it. But, yeah, I mean, when you're a fan of the sport and you have a relationship with the athletes where you see them every week or every day, it means a lot to see them compete. There's nowhere else I can go to where I feel like it's my team. It's like, yeah, you could give me Super Bowl tickets, but if I went to the game, I wouldn't be invested. I don't know them. I don't see them every day. The only place I can do that is at a Morehead State game. So whether it's soccer or cross country or football or men's and women's basketball, baseball or whatever, I mean, yeah, you love it. Yeah, I mean, you kind of get nervous. You kind of get excited about it the day of the game and in the days leading up to the game. And when you win, God, it feels good going home. I mean, you know, you're just kind of really – I think we all kind of feel that way, but I'm no different. I love it, and you've probably seen me walking around and pacing around. Sometimes I got to go somewhere by myself because I am a fan.
That's where you sometimes do have to separate it, and I do too. I've learned to, as I've been here, you know, 15 years now, just sometimes you kind of have to let it roll off your shoulder, knowing that you still got to work, and it's still, yeah, still a professional setting, but I tell you what, you know, and we were talking even last year and in the time you've been here, and gosh, there's, you know, there's really no better setting, and I'm talking football here, but, you know, soccer too, outdoors in the fall here in Moorhead.
God. Yeah.
And, you know, Jane Stadium, even now where we moved the soccer field, but the setting when those trees start to turn and the weather's crisp. Unfortunately, not playing right now. We will be in a different scenario in the spring. The weather will be a little different. But yeah. Don't you just love that, that's, even that setting? You know, it's not, you know, the biggest stadium ever or the everything like that, but it's a nice atmosphere here.
It's really nice, and I don't, I hope people that regularly come to the games realize that, because if you've been in other schools or been in other stadiums, we don't have this concrete jungle. We don't have 27 levels of platinum passes and gold level passes and like all this. Basically, the tailgating, God, it's right there in that parking lot, and what an awesome setting that is. I mean, I try and do that every game is, while the tailgating's going on, walk into the stadium and just get a picture of how it's right next to the field. And, yeah, the aesthetics of it, like, this is a beautiful part of the country, and it's one of the nicest places you can see a football game. No matter where you are on the stands, you're kind of right up to the action. It's more tangible. You're not 50 rows up with binoculars, you know, watching the game at a distance. It's a great place to watch a game. But, yeah, like you said, like soccer, it's the same, that especially since they moved to that other field.
Let's talk a little bit about soccer. And I know that kind of tell us your, I guess you, I don't know what the word would be, maybe an aficionado, an expert, I guess.
Yeah.
To an extent. And especially European soccer and or international soccer.
Right.
Your love for it? Where did that come from?
I was trying to think how that got started. So, like, I had an older cousin, and I didn't have any brothers and sisters, so I looked up to him, and he was a big soccer fan when we were growing up. And I kind of got into it through him. He played. He watched it. And one of the moments I'll remember is that when I was 8 or 9 years old, he was babysitting me, and it was the night of the Red game, which – if you're a soccer fan, you know what that – essentially, it was the first time the U.S. had qualified for the World Cup in 40 years. And all I knew at the time was that it was a big game that he was excited for. And, you know, we won. And I think that sort of planted the seed. So, like, he was kind of the one that got me into it. But soccer, for the longest time, all the way up until really a few years ago, was more or less – I always called it a garage band sport. Like – it was never the band that filled the arenas or the stadiums. They played in these small clubs. But if you were into it, if you were into that scene, you were as into it as anybody was into anything. And I think more or less, not just the game itself. I mean, I do love the game, especially when you're 8 years old. It's real easy to grasp in the sense you might not know the formations or the strategies or how any of that works, but you understand that they're trying to get the balls in the goal. And I think the culture of it, just being a part of what was an underground thing and meeting people that were kind of into the same thing, is what got me into it and kind of kept me into it. So, you know.
What is the, I guess the, and you've watched a lot of college soccer too, but man, there's got to be such a huge jump in, let's say, the college game to maybe like the professional level. I mean, these guys are just unbelievable, and I've seen some of the highest level soccer.
Yeah,
and not that the college game is the college game is great too,
mm-hmm.
on its level. But you know, do you have a favorite team or someone that you have kind of taken a liking to? Maybe a club or something along those lines.
Yeah, I guess if you're going to ask me about a club that's sort of on the world level, I would say Everton. Now, they've not been in the Champions League really since I've been alive. The last time they qualified for it, they were ineligible for it, largely because Tim Howard, who was the American goalkeeper, was their goalkeeper, and I kind of got into them. Domestically, I guess I would say Birmingham, just because I used to live there. And, like, they have that now, and it's kind of fun to see what FC Cincinnati has done, going from not existing to being really a force in the USL to now in the MLS. But I guess those would be the two. I should probably tell you now that I guess I'm a glutton for punishment. The better a team is, the more apt I am to not like them.
You like the underdog.
Yeah.
You like the underdog. Now, is it not true? I guess I've heard, and we were talking about, especially in European soccer, as opposed to over here, like you say, you have the, take baseball and maybe you have like a minor league club that's affiliated, is it not in Europe where you can almost change leagues depending on how good you are in a certain year or what your personnel are?
Yeah.
That's different from over here. Maybe not in soccer, but over here. But I know over there it's...
Yeah, over here, okay, on the world stage, which is basically everywhere but the United States, they are not franchises. Over here, whether it's the MLS, it basically works the same way as the NFL does. If you're an NFL team, you belong to the NFL in the same way that, like, you might own a McDonald's, but you can't just decide to switch it to a Hardee's. It's a franchise. The clubs over there are basically invited to play in leagues. And if you're starting from scratch, you're kind of, it's kind of in tiers. So the Premier League is the first level, and then there's what you would call minor leagues below that. But there's a second level, a third level, a fourth level. The best thing I know to compare it to is baseball. But depending on how good or how bad you do, you can move up and down. So in theory, like, you can be this small town amateur non-league team that eventually, if you keep winning and winning and winning, gets all the way up to the very top. It would be sort of like, I don't know, if a division, like if Morehead State, this isn't exactly the same, but it's kind of like this, in theory, could play their way all the way up to the SEC. So it's different in that sense that they actually are kind of clubs that go up and down.
Let's switch gears a little bit to college basketball, another one of your areas that you, I guess, take a liking to, and maybe, I don't know, if I guess it's stats and rankings and things like that. So just kind of I kind of want your take on how the OVC and what you've seen from the OVC in recent years as opposed to some of the other leagues, and is the OVC, do you feel, kind of on a national level on the rise? I mean, there's been some, I don't know about team-wise, but individual-wise, there's been... The talent in the OVC is second to none. It's almost the top players that have come out of here when you're talking about even lately have been downright incredible, I think.
They have. I would say, is it on the rise? Yes. If you sort of look at the hierarchy of college basketball, you've got your Power Five, and then you probably throw the Big East into that group, and that would be the top tier to where they're sending half the league or close to half the league to the NCAA tournament. Then below that, you've probably got the Atlantic 10, the American, the Mountain West, and the West Coast, which I don't know what you would call them. You certainly wouldn't call them mid-major. Well, I hate the term mid-major, by the way, but you wouldn't classify them as one-bid leagues. They're multi-bid leagues that aren't power leagues. And then you've kind of got the other 22, and I think that that's, among those other 22, the OVC is certainly making a push. It's difficult, but I don't want to say it's difficult but not impossible if you're in one of these leagues to get into the NCAA tournament without winning the conference tournament. But the OVC did it. They sent Belmont and Murray State, and they both won a game the last time we had a tournament. And I think that really put the OVC kind of on in the upper echelon of that group of, you know, regular single-bid leagues. I really like the league. I mean, obviously, I like us. I mean, I'm a bigger fan of us than anyone else. But if you look at what Murray State and Belmont have done, and that's one of the things about the college basketball game, it's just those are two well-coached teams with differing styles. And if whenever you watch a really good basketball game, it's like it's the under 16. What adjustments are they going to make? Or this team went on a 10-2 run. What are they going to do coming out of it to combat that? And it's almost like, in addition to the play, the chess matches of, like, what defense are you in, or what lineup are you bringing in, or what are you going to now, and how well is it executed? And that Murray-Belmont game, whether it's been during the regular season and during the conference tournament, really for the past 3 years, but certainly the last two, have just been as good as college basketball gets at any level. I mean, they've been close, they've been exciting, they've been meaningful because they've all had NCAA tournament applications. So I would rate the OVC pretty high in out of that group of that's just below the, what would you call them, the multi-bid non-majors.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Yeah, that term mid-major kind of came out a few years ago. I guess if you're any school, you probably think you are major, right? Whether regardless of what you are or not. But that, But yeah.
It just implies to me that, like, of the teams in the 22 leagues that are not regular multi-bid leagues, that they're all the same, and they're not. We're not like Belmont. We're not like probably Lehigh. I mean, there's drastic differences between that whole gamut. So that's why the term kind of nails on a chalkboard.
Well, Drew, I appreciate it very much. Talking about how you got here to Morehead State and some of your interest, and we certainly here at Morehead State appreciate the work that you've done and are continuing to do, and your staff up at the Eagle Center. So I appreciate you joining me here today.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. And again, it's like we talked for about 10 hours. I think we got about 30 good minutes out of it.
So. We're looking at 24, 30.
Okay,
we're
all right. So,
getting up to 25.
So
we'll go ahead and cut it off here. But again, that's Drew Barnett, Director of Student Athlete Services, and with his insight on all sorts of sports here on Talent Talk today. And we're glad that you are listening. And again, as Cassidy said in the intro, you can find our Talent Talk podcast on a variety of different places, including msueagles.com and on our social media channels at msueagles on Twitter and Facebook and a variety of other podcasting locations. So that's going to wrap it up for episode number 4 of Talent Talk. Join us again next time. I'm Matt Schabert, signing off.
This episode of Talent Talk is presented by the Morehead State Legacy Club. The Legacy Club is a part of the Eagle Athletic Family Fund and provides former Morehead State University student athletes the opportunity to maintain a lifelong connection with MSU athletics. This is an exclusive group of former MSU student athletes who understand the commitment and spirit to be an Eagle. If you are an MSU student athlete, make sure to join your former teammates in supporting the growth and success of MSU athletics. Visit msueagles.com today.